So continuing on our theme of expanding the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the flow of that mercy. Yesterday evening, our topic was, upon receiving mercy, Lord Chaitanya's mercy, what do we do with it? And this morning, I wanted to take, and this evening, this phrase from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Purity is the force. We've heard this before. Books are the basis. Purity is the force. That was a cow in the kitchen, by the way. Milking time. Books are the basis, purity is the force, utility is the principle. What's the other one? Huh? Preaching is the essence, okay. You heard that before? Anyone not heard that before? Okay, we'll do it slowly. We'll save the preaching is the essence for last. Books are the basis. Purity is the force. Utility is the principle. And preaching is the essence. British Sharp, you remember that book that was Preaching is the Essence book? And so, from this phrase, during the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was very innovative. The Yukta Vairagya principle is something that he was astoundingly expert at. Remember the first time I went to Vrindavan, we went to some temple that was not an ISKCON temple, because there was only our Krishna Balaram temple. But at this temple that we went was a platform, well, including where the deities are, the whole altar was that big. About, you know, waist height. And it was Krishna's, it was a three-dimensional depiction of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And it was, you know, the technology was quite rudimentary. It was a series of chains underneath the platform. And when the figures were starting from the start position, Krishna, Balaram, the cows and the cowherd boys, they went to the pasture ground. You could hear the chains grinding underneath the surface. And they would go out to the pasture ground. And then there was a gasura. And there was a, you know, some, Krishna killed the gasura. And then the cowherd boys went and took lunch. Then you had to wind it back, and they went back past the gasura again, back to where, to Nandagram. There was Govardhan Hill, and then it started again. Use of technology to present visually Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Of course, modern technology can do the same thing in a far more sophisticated manner, and many Vaishnavas are doing that. But the principle was the principle of utilization of something that's material to glorify Krishna, then it spiritualizes that something. Or another one, in my office in New York, I have a photograph of Bhaktisiddhanta sitting in a sewn coat, riding in the back seat of a convertible. Riding through downtown Vrindavan. Because the traditional teaching is a sannyasi does not wear sewn cloth. So he not only had sewn kurta, he had a nice long coat. And you're not supposed to go in conveyances. You're supposed to walk, especially in the holy town. So he got not only in a car. This is in, you know, whatever it was, 1940s, when very few people had cars. He not only got in a car, it was a convertible. With the top down. Waving to people. Riding through the streets of Vrindavan. Declaring boldly, Yukta Vairagya. If something can be utilized in service to Krishna, that's the real spirit of detachment. Not that I'm attached to riding in a convertible. I'm attached to serving Krishna with whatever facility there is to serve Krishna, whatever is appropriate. Or utility is the principle. Books are the basis. And our topic, purity is the force. So, if preaching is the essence, if increasing the flow of Lord Chaitanya's mercy is the essence, then one of the things, primary things, necessary for that flow to increase is our purity, or that our impurities get out of the way. Purity is the force. We all have this experience. We're trying to assist Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission in some way. And there's resistance. It's not happening. Instead of saying yes, persons are saying no, or get out of here. Get a job. Something like that. Something, you know, mild or unpleasant. So this is the material world, and where the flow of Lord Chaitanya's mercy is to bring the spiritual world so that it's accessible to persons in this material world. And if we were simply more pure, then it would be possible. Or because we're not so pure, it's not happening the way that it could happen if we were more pure. Compelling is Srila Prabhupada's success as evidence of his purity, or and an empowerment on top of purity. Not to say that others are not pure, but Prabhupada's purity was demonstrated by how he transformed the lives of so many individuals through his books and through his teachings and to his followers. That's the force part, that purity is the force. So if we want to increase the flow of Lord Chaitanya's mercy and be instruments of that, purity is a requirement. Purity is the force. So, what are our standards of purity? What does purity mean? There are a couple of very standard scriptural teachings that indicate what purity is. One of them is from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or Nectar Devotion, by Rupa Goswami. He's our, following Lord Chaitanya, the principal acharya in Lord Chaitanya's line. And this one verse is the essence of the entire Nectar Devotion. The essence of purity is the force. Anyavilashita shunyam jnanakarmadyanavritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhaktir uttama. So, very quickly, bhakti means pure, or the word that he used is uttama. Uttama is topmost. Tama is darkness, and uttama is above darkness. Uttama Bhakti. Like we have these stages of bhakti, Kanishtha, Madhyama, and Uttama, the topmost form of bhakti. So Uttam Bhakti is what bhakti is. Bhakti is pure. Devotion is pure. And what is that? It's first is the negative. It's without Anya Abhilash. Anya means other, and Abhilash means desires. Remember yesterday the statements by Prahlad Maharaj and others that Rishabdev, that desires color or cover our consciousness. Just like this morning is there's lots of fog. So it's not that the air is wet, but there's moisture in the air, and the moisture is wet. And you can't, at least we couldn't see so well moving about early morning. But that's not the natural condition of air. Air is minus that. So the natural condition of bhakti is minus material desire. And the two categories of material desire are jnana, speculative knowledge, trying to know things by that means, by our own power. The classic example is looking for the sun by using a torch. So that's the Vedic phrase, torch. We would say flashlight. Now they call a flashlight a torch. But where's the sun? The sun is self-luminous. You don't need a flashlight to find the sun. That's not the means. The sun discloses itself. So transcendence, the supreme transcendence, Krishna, discloses himself. You don't figure him out. Who is God? Searching for God. It's disclosed. Knowledge of the supreme personality of Godhead is attained that way. And jnana karma janavritam, so fruitive desire or fruitive work that comes from fruitive desire. I want to enjoy. And then the varieties of enjoyment are unlimited. I've got a long list. My list may not be the same as the next person, but we all have our long list of I want to enjoy. And as long as that independent from Krishna enjoyment spirit is prevalent, spiritual understanding, spiritual life is missing. Went somewhere. I don't know where it went. Just went away. What happened? So bhakti is pure. Bhakti is minus those things. Okay, minus those things, what's the positive? Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. The cultivation of that which is pleasing to Krishna. Which means the prohibition is that which is not pleasing to Krishna, I don't act upon it. That which is not pleasing to Krishna, I don't act upon it. But that which is pleasing to Krishna, it's my life and soul. That's bhakti. And bhakti is pure. The second standard definition comes from Narada, the Narada Pancharatra, where the presentation is different, but the result is the same. Sarva upadi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchate. So, again, it starts with the minus or the negative, and then the positive. Bhakti is minus or without vinir muktam. One is liberated from or freed from the condition of upadis. Upadis means designations. Designations like, I'm a sannyasi, and you're a grahastha, perhaps. Or, I'm American, and perhaps you're Indian. Or, I'm white, and you're black. Or, I'm old, you're young. I'm man, you're woman. I'm smart. You're also smart, but... But the other way around, I'm dumb, and you're smart. They're designations. They're not who we really are. Accepting who we aren't, who we are not to be who we are, that's illusion. So bhakti is when those designations are eliminated. They're not part of our reality, our sense of what's real. Saying yes to reality and subordinating our conditioned tendencies to that reality. The reality, the light will dismiss the darkness. Sarva upadi vinir muktam tat paratvena nir malam. Mala means contamination, and nir malam is without contamination. Bhakti is uncontaminated with I and mind conceptions, material I and mind conceptions. Then what is it? Rishikena Rishikesha. Rishikesha is Krishna. He is the master of the senses. So utilizing the senses in service of the master of the senses. Without malam, without contamination, without material conception. Just serving Krishna. I may act according to this position or that position as is socially appropriate. But that's not my identity. It's a role within society to keep things conducive to spiritual advancement. But my identity is I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. And I engage my senses in an appropriate manner in service to Krishna. To please the senses of the Master. I want to read briefly just a few verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is Adi Lila chapter 9. The desire tree of devotional service. You remember the metaphor of Lord Chaitanya descended and manifested the desire tree of devotion. He became the tree. He became the gardener of that tree of devotion. He ate the fruits of the tree and he distributed the fruits of the tree. He had multiple roles in the whole, in his mission. So this is from that chapter. I have the wrong volume. Does someone have Madhya Leela from that back bookshelf? Madhya Leela, chapter 9. Madhya Leela, chapter 9. Sorry for the delay here. Fortunately, the temple room was well equipped.
Madhyalila chapter 9.
My mistake. It's chapter 19. Madhyalila chapter 19. It's a typo, but it's in my paper here, but it's 19. This is the translation of Anyabhilashita Shunyam from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When first-class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires. Knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy and fruitive action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably, as Krishna desires. And then rephrasing in Krishna Das Kaviraj's own words, a pure devotee must not cherish any desire other than to serve Krishna. He should not offer worship to the demigods or to mundane personalities. He should not cultivate artificial knowledge, which is devoid of Krishna consciousness. And he should not engage himself in anything other than Krishna conscious activities. One must engage all one's purified senses in the service of the Lord. This is the favorable execution of Krishna conscious activities. These activities are called Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service. If one renders such pure devotional service, he develops his original love for Krishna in due course of time. In Vedic literatures, like the Pancharatras and Srimad Bhagavatam, these symptoms are described. Next is the Sarva Upadhi verse from Narada Pancharatra. It's quoted next in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, just after Anyabhilashita Shunyam. So it's Rupa Goswami. That term is Rupa Goswami's language, and he's supporting it with Narada Pancharatra. How do mothers and fathers know which cry is their child? It's magic. One over here and one over here, and they both know immediately. To me, it's all the same. All right. Quoting, this is the translation of Sarva Upadhi, Vinir Muktam. Bhakti, or devotional service, means engaging all our senses in the service of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of all the senses. When the spirit soul renders service unto the Supreme, there are two side effects. Interesting translation. One is freed from all material designations, and one's senses are purified simply by being employed in the service of the Lord. So our process is not simply meditation. It's meditation, People ask,
in your process, is there a method of meditation?
That's what our process is. But in addition, the senses need to become purified, because if you're trying to purify the mind, but the senses are not purified, the senses will try to drag the mind. Go here, get this. Go there, get that. Stay away from that. Oh, bad. And the mind is agitated. The mind cannot become peaceful. From Srimad Bhagavatam, just as the celestial waters of the Ganges flow unobstructed into the ocean, so when my devotees simply hear of me, their minds come to me. I reside in the hearts of all. That's a verse spoken by Kapila Dev when his mother, Devahuti, is asking, in devotional service, is there sometimes the influence of the modes of nature? And his answer is yes. Because bhakti is pure, but sometimes the modes of nature act, just like air is pure or water is pure, but you know, it's hard to find it because it's contaminated. So what is bhakti that's contaminated with the modes of nature, he describes, and then bhakti that's uncontaminated. So this one is bhakti that's pure. And he uses the metaphor, Ganges flowing downstream. There's no effort. Okay, Ganges, time to go downstream. It goes downstream. And so also the mind, the symptom of purity is when there is Krishna Katha, the mind goes. When you're chanting, there's not this, you know, arm wrestling thing. Okay, mind, go over there. There's the holy name, please. Please. The mind goes. There's no effort required. That's our natural state, and that's the state of purity. Mentioned previously also a description of purity is there's a nice section in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. In the very beginning section of 11th canto is the Navayogendras. These are the nine sons of Rishabhdev. We heard yesterday Rishabhdev instructing his sons. Nine of those 100 sons became Mahabhagavata Vaishnavas. And those are the Navayogendras. And in the beginning of the 11th canto, the Navayogendras are instructing a king. Just as Rishabhdev instructed them, they're now instructing the king. And they're instructing the king in many subject matters, but chapter 3 is attaining liberation, where one is sarvopadi vinir muktam, one is freed from all worldly designations and is fully absorbed in devotional service. Because they weren't monists, they were Vaishnavas, as was their father was, an incarnation of the Lord. So they were engaged in pure devotional service, and they were instructing in how to. So this is following the subject matter of what is purity, because purity is the force to expand the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So not only upadis, but subsequently or subsets of that are the material identifications that we make. So in that section, 11th canto, chapter 3 section, there's one, I'm going to read a few verses, but here's something from the purport. Material world is full of embarrassing and irritating situations. Unless one is inclined to be very much forgiving, he will be infected by a vindictive mentality which spoils one's spiritual consciousness. That's not purity. So here we are. We're striving for purity and we're in a contaminated atmosphere where everywhere is this material world is filled with irritating situations and embarrassing situations. And what do? This quality is of forgiveness is very important. There's a saying, comes from somewhere, to err is human, to forgive is divine. You heard that one before? It's a nice one besides hearing it. It's a nice to live it. To err is human. We all make mistakes. We certainly know the mistakes of other people. To forgive is divine. And then comes the yeah, but. Yeah, but you know, what they did was so bad. And so on. I can forgive small things, but big things, I can't forgive. I hold on to it. And when we hold on to it and don't let go of it, one's spiritual consciousness is spoiled. That's the contamination of consciousness. In the Sankhya philosophy of Kapiladev, he gives 24 elements. And there's material elements. And the 24th is contaminated consciousness. But consciousness is pure. So what's the 24? The 23 are real easy. There's 5, 5, 5, 5, and 3. That's 23. So the 5 material elements. 5 knowledge acquiring senses. 5 working senses. 5 objects of the senses. There's 20. Mind, intelligence, and false ego. And then there's contaminated consciousness. It's described in slightly differently in different places of the third canto, but commonly that's one of the 24th element translations, contaminated consciousness. But consciousness is not contaminated in its natural state. Consciousness is pure. Consciousness, like the soul, is pure. But when the soul identifies itself with what it's not, like designations and things like that, like, you know, I deserve to be honored because, you know, I didn't do something wrong and I'm being accused of doing something wrong. I'm just walking along in life and all of a sudden someone insulted me. And I was trying to help, you know how it goes. I was just trying to help them and all of a sudden, you know, all this insulting thing comes and hurtful and mean spirited and ooh. When you enter into that territory, your spiritual consciousness becomes contaminated. So here, let me read there are just 3 verses from 11th canto, chapter 3, texts 22, 23, 24. 11, 3, 22, 3, and 4. The earlier verses are describing coming to the stage of preparing oneself, then accepting a spiritual master. So now, accepting the bona fide spiritual master as one's life and soul and worshipable deity, the disciple should learn from him the process of pure devotional service. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the soul of all souls, is inclined to give himself to his pure devotees. Therefore, the disciple should learn from the spiritual master to serve the Lord
without duplicity. Does that mean that they're serving the Lord with duplicity? It would seem like, you know, that's not serving the Lord, that's cheating. Or something like that. Or business deal. I'll do this, and you do that. Here's the contract, please sign it. I'll do this, and you do that. Okay? That's not what pure devotional service is. Like the very the phrases that Srila Prabhupada was commenting about Vasudeva Datta, that when he spoke the way that he did to Lord Chaitanya, please liberate all the conditioned souls, not just people, all the conditioned souls, all those trees and those peacocks and the grass and the little insects and the bugs and the ants that are zooming all over the place and, you know, all living entities. Liberate them all. And if there's too much karmic bondage, because it's too heavy to lift, just transfer it all to me. I'll accept it. If it means millions of lifetimes of living through those karmic reactions, that's okay. Please liberate them. So the statement of Srila Prabhupada was that Vasudeva Dutt was not saying that. It was an acute expression. There was no duplicity. That's what he said. And here's the same idea. Without duplicity. Amaya. You know what maya is. Well, this is the opposite. Amaya. Without duplicity, without deceit. I say this and I mean that. It goes on. Without duplicity. When we say, my dear Lord Krishna, I am yours. You can do with me whatever you like, just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. You can do with me whatever you like. Well, you know, we have our conditions. It's not whatever he likes. As long as it feels good. Because I want to enjoy. And that's what the whole program is about, right? It's I want to enjoy. But the devotional program is whatever you want. And if what you want is something that I don't want, I'll change my want to be what you want. It's the nectar of devotion. From describing the rasas and to describe the rasa of servitorship, dasya rasa, that's where it begins. The example is given of Pradyumna, the son of Krishna. And the teaching is, or the lesson is, if Pradyumna wanted something that Krishna didn't want, he accepted what Krishna wanted and put aside what he wanted. And then conversely, if he didn't want something, but Krishna wanted that something, he wanted that something. He just subordinated his will, let, in the Christian phraseology, let thy will be mine. That's love. The desire of the beloved is what I desire. Only it works two ways, because whatever Krishna sees as the desire of his pure devotee, Krishna wants. But his pure devotee doesn't want anything other than what Krishna wants. So it's very nice. This is the right kind of competition. The material kind of competition smells bad, has a foul odor. But this one is not like that. It's love. No contamination. And when that's done without duplicity, such a disciple should learn from the spiritual master to serve the Lord without duplicity and in such a faithful and favorable
way that the Supreme Lord, being satisfied, will offer himself to the faithful disciple. This is 11th Canto Bhagavatam. Long purport. Next, a sincere disciple should learn to disassociate the mind from everything material. Rishabhdev's teaching is the same. And positively cultivate association with his spiritual master and other saintly devotees. You should be merciful to those who are in an inferior position to him. Cultivate friendship with those on an equal level and meekly serve those in the higher spiritual position. Thus, one should learn to deal properly with all living beings. Okay, well, we don't have an ideal world. We have the material world. And, you know, people don't behave like that. And, you know, it can be irritating. So what do? We don't get irritated. We forgive, because these are persons that their constitutional position is their spirit soul. They're just under the influence of the modes of nature and acting according to the impelling forces of the modes of material nature, and they don't know better. And here comes purity as the force. If we were simply more pure, then by association, they can come out of that influence of the modes of nature. The problem is, we're not sufficiently pure. So rather than blaming the other person, we can look up within ourselves and say, I wish I was more pure. Because if I was more pure, the circumstance here would change by influence of purity, by spiritual force. That's purity. I need to become pure. Not, you know, they need to do something about their problem. I need to become pure. This is how the flow of Lord Chaitanya's mercy increases when there's a conduit through which it can flow. Without obstruction. The obstruction is impurity. Without obstruction is purity. And then the flow of Lord Chaitanya's mercy can increase. That has a 5-page purport. Here's text 24. To serve the spiritual master, the disciple should learn cleanliness, austerity, tolerance, silence, study of the Vedic knowledge, simplicity, celibacy, nonviolence, and equanimity in the face of material dualities, such as heat and cold, happiness and distress. Because happiness and distress, by material definition, is but sense perception. As far as the soul is concerned, the material circumstances are neither happiness or distress. I'll say it again. Matra sparshas tu kaunteya. You know this verse? Sitoshna sukha dukkha agama payonisha tangsitikshu sabharta. One should be tolerant, but on what basis should one be tolerant? Not just like, okay. Jai Prabhu. I really can't stand it, but I'm told to be tolerant, so I'm just tolerating you. Not like that. With knowledge that matra sparshas to kaunteya, this sense of happiness or distress, honor or dishonor, it is nothing but the contact of the senses with some sense object that says, oh, this is nice, or oh, that's not nice. It's the illusory energy manifesting in this variety or that variety, and it's ever changing, and that's my happiness and distress. The real happiness is the soul's connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So all of that duality thing, the external feature of the illusory energy thing, that's ever changing, we don't place so much importance in that. We can address it, but that's not the essence. The essence, the training is, the essence is our eternal relationship with Krishna and our service unto Krishna. So if this feature of the illusory energy is presenting itself, then how can I best serve Krishna in this circumstance, or that circumstance, or the other circumstance? I was just hearing Srila Prabhupada speaking on this point, a recorded message, where he was saying, it was in India, and I don't know, somewhere in India, but it was apparently the hot season. You could hear the fan. You could hear the fan almost more than you can hear his voice. Going right into the recording. So he said, here I am. I'm by the fan because it's hot. So because I have the suffering is because I have this body. Because the body is, you know, a source of pleasure, but it's, that's what we think, but it's causing me suffering, so I have to have the fan. Or it's winter and it's pinching cold. He used that word, pinching cold. And so I have to dress warmly and stay out of the cold because of this body. So happiness is not this feature versus that feature or somewhere in the middle. There's this nursery rhyme that I learned when I was little. I don't know where it came from. Some like it hot, some like it cold, some like it in the pot 3 days old. Mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. What's your flavor? But a devotee says, the training of a devotee is to not place value in that whatever particular feature of the modes of nature that's being manifest. Rather, consolidate one's attention, consciousness, invest consciousness in serving Krishna favorably. And once again, these other things take our attention away. And when our attention goes away, then our spiritual consciousness is lost. We're in this impure state where we're struggling against the illusory energy that's more powerful than we are. But more powerful than the illusory energy is the controller of the illusory energy. So we take shelter of Krishna. And it's not just a nice teaching. It's the life of transcendental life. And the access to that, teaching-wise, is the spiritual master. But we have the teachings. How do we access, like, living it? It's the mercy. Not just the teachings is an essential part, but with the teachings comes the means to fulfill the teachings. That's the fullness of the mercy. To expand the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, increase the flow of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, we have to be fit recipients of that mercy, the fullness of that mercy, the capability of performing all of this. Okay, so a couple other verses, just scriptural references. We have a similar idea discussed right in Bhagavad Gita, where in chapter 13, Arjuna is asking Krishna six questions. One of those six questions is, what is knowledge? And there's a whole list, 19 items of knowledge. And the foremost of all of them is pure devotion. Mayi cha nanya yogina bhaktir avyabhicharini. Bhakti, avyabhichari. Avyabhichari means without cessation. There's not a moment to the next moment to the next moment. There's no vacation from devotional service. Take a break. I've been working hard. I need a little break. That's material. When we work hard materially, sankalpa vikalpa. It's explained in Nectar Devotion, introduction. This is the mind. It says, I've been working hard, I need a vacation. Or, then after the vacation, now I need to go back to work. You know, like children after the summer, they're so restless, they're ready to go back to school. They can't wait till they get out of school and go to have vacation. By the end of vacation, they're ready to go back to school. Anyway, the mind, that's the mind. Sankalpa, vikalpa. Devotional service should not be accepted merely from the platform of the mind. Certainly the mind has to say yes. But staying engaged in Krishna's service. Bhaktir avya bicharini. And before that, mayi chananya yogina cha ananya yoga. Ananya yoga means pure devotion. Ananya, nothing but bhakti. Unmixed devotion. That where there's no cessation. Or ahaituki apratiyata. There's nothing that can start it and nothing that can stop it. Everything material has a start and stop point. Everything material. Everything material. Something that impels it to begin and something that stops it. But pure devotion doesn't require the right circumstances, and then I can engage in devotional service. Even if one's body is infirm or something, like Bhishma Dev, he was incapacitated. But he was so filled with devotion, he completely satisfied all of the persons that came to see him, like a perfect host, who couldn't even move. And his mind was completely fixed upon Krishna. He served Yudhisthira Maharaj by giving him eloquent description of the duties of a king. In any circumstance one can serve. Circumstance may dictate what you cannot do or can do. But serve is something constitutionally can't be taken from us. Very important. One last one is the mentioned previously, but Prahlad Maharaj, our emblem, just like Vasudev Dutta, of pure devotional service. When Lord Nrisingadev was wanting Prahlad to take a benediction, finally he just instructed him, you rule the kingdom for a long time. Enjoy the opulence of the kingdom, but don't worry, because your mind is completely fixed upon me, you won't become bewildered and deluded by that illusory feature. Take the position of king, not as the enjoyer of the kingdom, but as my servant. So he said to Lord Nrisingadev, I'm not that kind of devotee that wants to do business with you. Vanik seva. You know this word, vanik. It's business. I'm not a businessman devotee. I'm simply your devotee. Our relationship is, you're the master, and I'm the servant, and there's nothing else going on. Our relationship is not made of any other thing. You're the master, and I'm the servant. I don't want something. Just your service, and that you're pleased by that service. That's all. That's purity. As much as we can attain that purity, then the flow of Lord Chaitanya's mercy will expand. We can be instruments of that mercy of Lord Chaitanya, individually and collectively. So striving for purity is our real mission. It's a symptom of the quality of goodness, and it's full manifestation in the state of transcendence. And when Kapila Dev is describing to Devahuti devotional service that's influenced by the mode of goodness, that devotional service in the mode of goodness is, I do something because it ought to be done. It's duty. I do it because it's duty. I don't do it begrudgingly. I do it because it's duty. It's my duty. But further, it will purify my existence when I perform my duty. And I want a purified existence. So let me take up this activity. It will purify me. Now, in the state of pure devotional service, unmixed even by the mode of goodness, there's no contemplation, oh, this will purify me. So it's good for us to recognize what our position is. We're not in that strata of pure devotional service, because pure devotional service is symptomized by the mind just goes to Krishna. When Prabhupada was asked, what is quality chanting? How do we know when we're chanting with quality? There's a very nice japa retreat topic on this, where in South Africa, Brahmananda and a group of devotees were with Prabhupada in a morning walk, and that was the question, how do we know if we're chanting with quality? And the way that Prabhupada answered the question, they thought he didn't understand the question. He understood the question. He said, you must chant. That was his initial. You must chant. No, but Prabhupada, they want to know, we must chant. Yeah, but when we're chanting with quality, how will we know? And he said the same thing, you must chant. Then he finally came out and said, there's no question of quality chanting for you. When there's quality chanting, why 16 rounds? 16 million rounds. The tongue does not want to do anything but chant Krishna's holy name. That's chanting with quality. You must chant. That's purity. Like the Ganges flowing downstream in rainy season, the mind goes at once. Put a little piece of wood on the Ganges, you know, it's gone. You don't have to say, okay. It's gone. That's purity. So we can strive for purity, because then we can become better instruments. Or, yeah. Nimitta matram bhavya savya sacha. Instruments of Krishna's service. It's pleasing to him that the mercy, Lord Chaitanya's mercy is distributed. Let us become more fit to please Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his transcendental associates, and our lives will become perfect. And simultaneously, the benefit goes to others. I'll end there. Thank you very much. Any comments, Donna Kelly?
Maharaj, you mentioned that one of the symptoms of purity of heart is that a person who's in a subordinate position will sacrifice their desire or will to the will or desire of one who's in a superior position. You said it's a symptom of love. So my question is, sometimes we find ourselves not so willing to submit our desire to the desire or the will of another person because of lack of trust, maybe. And I was wondering, like, how do we understand that? Because sometimes you know, we think that discrimination is the better part of valor, discretion is the better part of valor, and so sometimes, either whether it's our parents or our teachers or sometimes even our spiritual mentors, we see them perhaps make misjudgments in our lives or other people's lives, so we have a mentality that I have to use my discretion, that's the better part of valor. So where does one, you know, draw the line between using their discretion but not being guilty of not having purity of heart?
You ask such easy questions, Diane. First of all, let me go back and edit and say it's not just subordinate your will to a superior, but subordinate your will to others, whoever that may be. Let's say husband, wife, or, you know, a leader and the constituents of a leader. It's there's submission of will in that dynamic in some circumstances, provided there's not some principle that's being violated. But it goes on. It's love. So the question you've asked is a delicate one. One part of it is ask yourself the question, what's more important, the relationship or being right? In some cases, if something is strong enough, then being firm on what's right, that's a discrimination, or discretion is the better part of valor. But, you know, that phrase is, valor is, I'm right, and I'll fight for what's right, because it's right. But sometimes discretion is the better part of valor. And, you know, commonly that you, let's say there's a combat, there's a clash between two opposing parties. You know, I can be valorous and fight to the finish, or I can be discriminating and say it's not wise. Like an example is Yudhisthira's advice to Bhima just after the incident of trying to kill Bhima by poisoning him and tying up in ropes and throwing him in the river. And when Bhima comes back and he tells the whole deal that what happened, Yudhisthira's advice is discretion is the better part of valor. It's not very good idea that we make war with our cousins, because right now we've just come back. We've been with Pandu and just recently come back. They have all the alliances, and it's not a good idea. Just be patient. Discretion is the better part of valor. But in the dynamic that you're speaking about, discretion might be, I value this relationship more than being right. And who, you know, maybe my sense of what's right is not right. Maybe I don't have the full picture. But even if, you know, even if, what's more, to me, what's more important may be the relationship. So it's okay. It's okay. Not just I say it's okay, but inside I don't feel it's okay. But it's okay. And there are other circumstances. Your question specifically is where you draw the line. So, you know, it requires some discretion to exercise discretion properly. And, you know, I think different persons draw the line in different places. But you know, if one thing I would recommend is if I continue, I, the person who has some in a relationship with another person, whether superior or subordinate or peers, if I'm feeling I'm continuing to hold on to something that by my power of discrimination, power of analysis, I can see there's something that's unresolved here. And if I can't let go of that something, that's, you know, something needs to be done about it. I can't let go of that something. And it may be I need to go and speak with the person. You know, I'm holding on to this something. And I, you know, in our relationship, it's impeding the flow of our relationship because I'm holding on to this something. Maybe there's, from your side, something that can be said that can help address that something. And in some cases, it's just, you know, the bond of affection dissolves that something. Maybe it's information that one didn't have in one's hand to look at that, you know, discriminating component that you were, you know, holding on to. I don't have the whole picture. Maybe if the other person doesn't know how you're feeling, and if they knew how you're feeling, their sincere apology with an explanation, you know, guilty with an explanation, could dissolve the, you know, sometimes that's required. But it's, you know, it's in relationships, there's always a give and take. It's not just one thing. It's a give and take. Love and trust. So your point was, if trust is, if not broken, it's like damaged, then it makes it more difficult to have that kind of an exchange. Difficult to have a loving exchange when there's a lack of trust. But, you know, this is one of the things that I don't want to sacrifice. This is a general statement, just from this advice given from the 11th canto, chapter 3. I don't want to sacrifice my spiritual consciousness. I don't want to sacrifice seeing the other person as Krishna's devotee, who's then, that as I am, trying to go to Krishna. I don't want to lose that sight of that. Here's a sincere soul trying to go to Krishna. If that's what's going on, the problem's over here. I need to address that. I may need some help to address that, but I need to address that. And there are some circumstances in life where you can be forgiving of another individual, but choose to remain distant. I can think of one or two people like that. I choose to remain distant from them. And you know, they're very hurtful persons. And I don't hold, you know, the mean-spirited things that they've done to myself and to others against them. You know, they're suffering a lot. That's why they're in that mean-spirited disposition. But I'm going to keep my distance from that hurtful person. I don't have the purity to help that person. That's a discrimination component. So there's, and each of us have our capacity. So where one draws the line has a lot to do with the individual. I think that the individual should have good friends and good guides to help him understand, you know, am I making the right choice here? That we're not just like, you know, living out our own autobiography in a vacuum somewhere. We're in the Vaishnava Sangha, and with well-wishing and wise Vaishnavas, acting wisely in places that require fine discrimination in relationships. See, I told you it was an easy question. Anyone else? Just do one. Pick one of the three, your favorite. Well, there's both, but I'm using it from the platform of absolute. In the relative sense, there are things that are relatively more pure. The mode of goodness is relatively more pure than the passion and ignorance. But real purity, just like pure devotional service, is absolutely pure. Now, if we're cultivating, I may be in this contaminated state, but if I'm following the teachings of Rupa Goswami and cultivating that, that's also pure devotional service. By Rupa Goswami's definition, in the sadhana stage, it's also pure devotional service. You follow what I just said? Oh, that was a tricky one. Sounds like a lawyer. I'm not saying, you know. Yeah, one can say that. To some extent. That means we can say the other to some extent too. Is that all right? Okay. We have a question up front here. Right here, right here. Raise your hand again. It's a comment, not a question. You like Gita Nagari, right?
Yes, I do.
Me too.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thanks for your wonderful lectures on Krishna service. And thanks for giving wonderful Prabhu Sachikumar Prabhu and Prantarani Maharaji.
Okay.
And thank you in kind of chanting my rounds to a couple more.
Hare Krishna. He's inspired to increase his chanting. That's very nice.
Going back to the same subject about modeling of desire of speed and others.
How are we doing with breakfast? You're going to check?
Yes.
Okay.
So whether it's modeling of desire of speed and others.
Subordinating of desires. Okay.
To others.
To others.
And superiors. How can one increase from this wherever I'm at, where it's not so much giving or taking, and how can one increase some practical steps that I can take to increase that position of subordination?
Or enter in more into the realm of loving exchanges as opposed to business exchanges. Loving exchanges, very simply, loving exchanges, you're not keeping score. In business exchanges, you're keeping score. 3 times I did this and you've done nothing. You ever have conversations like that with your wife? I'm always doing this, but you never do that. Well, it's because, you know, I'm keeping score, and you have 2 different scoreboards. Something like that. So, you know, put the scoreboard away. And just constitutionally, you serve. You gotta serve anyway. And you like to serve. But the problem is, I also like, you know, keeping score. How much you're serving me. It's only fair, right? But, so, without considering, this is the unconditional dimension, without considering was the return for my investment. He says, invest in a loving relationship, under the guidance of your very capable mentors. You're investing in loving relationship. Very nice beginning. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Okay.
When we like to chant and be with devotee, is it possible to have sense gratification in that? Like, I'm having good time, I'm having good feeling.
Well, there's a difference between enjoying devotional service and sense gratification. There is a difference. It's night and day difference. In the enjoying devotional service, whose happiness is it? It's Krishna. It's joyful. It's joyfully performed. It's meant to be joyfully performed. Tushyanti cha ramanti cha katayantascha mam nityam. Tushyanti cha ramanti cha. It's meant. But sense gratification is the sand in the sweet rice. It spoils the preparation, where my senses become, the object of gratification. It spoils the whole thing. One wants to become the enjoyer of Krishna's happiness. Take any realm of service, and it spoils it. Like, I'll say, I've enjoyed very much preparing for this retreat. I was so happy. Just the topic is such a nice topic, and going into the topic and meditating on how we've received so much, I was like floating. And being with all of you, and being in Gita Nagari, and being with Radha Damodar, and it's, I'm very happy. Genuinely. Now, what's it all about? Is it my happiness or Krishna's happiness? If I start to become the enjoyer of that happiness, like, it's about me. Then the whole thing is lost. Krishna disappears. The happiness disappears. But if it's Krishna's happiness, it simply increases. The devotees that have been organizing the event. It's been a lot of work. We're enjoying the fruits of a lot of organization. So, if they're thinking, I did a good job, and boom, 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 the spiritual happiness is gone. Or, Dhruva and Mother Kalini and the devotees here in Gita Nagari, anticipating this mob of people coming in and invading Gita Nagari, and, they're happy to have us come and, dance before Radha Damodar and appreciate the project that they're working very hard to develop. And for years, these Mother Kalini, for years and years and years, it's just like holding the fort, keeping things going. So, the mood of service is that real happiness. And it's good to enjoy that. Or the kirtan performers, one of the youth, they were requested to take responsibility for the bhajan sessions. So they were asking specifically how to avoid becoming show-offs. I mean, they're using that language, but being the enjoyers of now we're on stage, and instead to be in the mood of just serving the Vaishnavas and pleasing Krishna with nice kirtan. It's night and day difference. So where does our consciousness go? when that happiness of devotional service comes. If it's increasing Krishna's happiness, Krishna's enjoying, the deities are very pleased, we're serving the deities, and it makes all the difference. Then, you know, we lose sight of that when we start thinking how I'm enjoying. It's very subtle, but it's night and day difference. Okay, breakfast is ready. And let's keep our schedule. Wouldn't that be novel? Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Śrī Śrī Rādhā Dāmodara ki, Gaura Prema Nandini.